Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are searching for truths in ancient orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast on Apple iTunes or on the internet at epostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. Whether you're listening on CD, over the internet, or on your MP3 player, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Welcome to The Next Step. Hey, this is Father Vazquez, welcoming you back to The Next Step, a podcast dedicated to looking at life and inspecting the very fabric of our being through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission, and of course is brought to you exclusively by the good folks at the Apostles' Net, Apostolic Evangelism for an expanding and electronic universe. If you're ready, let's take the next step. Well, happy Earth Day to all of you. Yes, our great big planet is now 15 billion years young. Yes, today is Earth Day, and it is a very special day because, well, all days are special, but when you get a chance to look at the Earth, this morning I got up for something called the occultation. Yes, the occult, is it? Well, actually, the moon was supposed to pass over Venus, and you know, we go crazy out here for these opportunities to see these stellar marvels. And my wife Susan and I got up at 5 o'clock and we got a chance to look at the moonrise, and Venus wasn't there. But it also gave us a chance to pause for a moment and think about this great planet, the planet Earth. And this is Earth Day. You know, all around the country there are opportunities to focus in on our responsibility for this great planet. Of course, there's a movie coming out called Earth, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. It may take me a 15 billion years to get out to see it. I am so far backed up on my movies right now, but I know that they're touting this as being equal, on par with the Penguin movie, or even more prettier, more awe-inspiring. And the Penguin movie, man, do you remember that one when it came out? I mean, I walked out of that theater just like bobbling around like those penguins. Well, the Earth movie is out there and I can't wait to see it. But even more important, maybe it's a chance for all of us to really focus in on this beautiful planet that sustains life, that gives us life, harbors life, and unless we're careful with it, we may have this big planet just say, that's enough. I can't do it anymore. I can't sustain life anymore. You know, all of the cautionary signs are out there. We need to be tuned into those things. And I think days like today, Earth Day, gives us a chance to really stop, reflect. What is our relationship with the environment, with the earth, with nature? And we have to talk about these terms equally on par with our discussions about relationships in general with one another. Yes, we have relationships with one another. We certainly have relationships with our environment. I remember back in February, I shared with you, when I got back from Armenia, one of the highlights of that trip was being in the monastery and realizing that they were addressing, this 1,700-year-old church, 2,000-year-old church, was addressing issues such as green theology. This was so refreshing to me that here in the third world, they were discussing this. And it's so important because a lot of times we talk about ourselves, especially Western civilization, where we really have trashed our environments to the point that we really use to excess. And you look at the third world, and it's very easy to look at third world countries where industrialization goes unchecked many times and the environment is thrashed. But really in those countries, far less than what we're doing over here. And here in those countries, they were discussing these subjects. Back in the 70s, I remember writers such as John Cobb talking about the theology of ecology and our responsibility as custodians of this planet. Now, let's make a transition, because today, of course, we're not going to be talking about the environment per se, but we're going to be talking about that extreme reality of when we do rape not only the planet, but we rape our environment. And I use that word intentionally, rape, because many times, you know, people will always, and especially if you've ever engaged in any Bible study, they've always, or any kind of, let's say, spiritual talk, there's always a point at which people say, well, what are the absolutes? Do we have absolutes in this world? Are there absolute rules? And you could point to things, let's say, common rules that we all have. For instance, the Ten Commandments. You shall not steal, you shall not murder. And you say, well, along the way, for most of these, you can make exceptions. You say, we shall not kill, except in the sense, in case of self-defense. Now, that is taking a rule and bending it or rationalizing according to the conditions that you have. So it's not an absolute for certain people. You should not lie, but in the case of self-defense, of course, there's the stories of how the Nazis would come from door to door, and is there any Jews living in this house? And the owner of that German house, the German, would lie and say, no, there aren't any Jews. Now, that's a lie, but it saved a life. We remember this in countless stories, and Frank not excluded. And we see these stories over and over in many scenarios of wartime. But if you're really pressed to it, is there a rule that absolutely under any condition cannot be broken? And I've thought about this many times. I've discussed this with many friends. And the one absolute that I could come to, the one rule, is rape. There is absolutely at no time that rape is permissible, or can be justified, or can be condoned. And this is the crime that we're discussing today, because we're going to be spending the next few minutes discussing the crime of genocide. You know, suicide is taking your own life. Homicide is taking the life of another. Genocide is basically killing off the gene, killing off a people. It's the ultimate of crimes. It's the ultimate of crimes because it involves rape. It involves, I'm not talking about just the sexual act. I'm talking about taking away, going against the will of others, forcing your will upon somebody else. And in this case, forcing your will upon an entire civilization. We're going to be talking about genocide today in a very unique manner, in a spiritual approach to it. You've heard me many times talk about the situation in Darfur. Along the way, I've talked about the Armenian genocide. I've talked about Rwanda. Today, we're going to take a spiritual approach to it. This being the 94th anniversary of the Armenian genocide, of course, the Holocaust is being remembered throughout the world as a Holocaust commemoration this week. We know that in Rwanda, the genocide began in April, and so April is a unique time of year for the Rwandan people. And of course, there is a genocide taking place in Darfur right now. And that happens to be the reason why we look to the past, so we don't make the same mistakes. And when we do make those mistakes, we need to stop it. We need to find our ways. And I'm telling you, you can look at guns, you can look at weapons, but there is a spiritual avenue, a spiritual approach that so few people really look at. We're going to be inspecting that today. Of course, we've got Hiraj coming in from London talking about something that's taking place right now in Turkey, of all places. He's coming in with the global perspective. But before we go any further, how about if we kick it off with a beautiful song? This is Parik Nazaryam. Vay le, 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 gora. I wanted to start off with Parik Nazarian because she captures so much of what is traditional Armenian sound, Armenian music. And, you know, this is the biggest tragedy when we talk about genocide. This is beyond war. You know, with genocide, it's fueled with hate, a hatred towards a people. So there's a destruction of not only life, but of a lifestyle, of a way that people have existed, and an annihilation of that group of people, so that even their history gets knocked out. And as we know so many times, even in our personal lives, don't we know that? That it's the victor that writes the history. So even the history gets knocked out. But of course, we can go in many directions when we're talking about genocide, and definitely we can bring in history. But as I said a few minutes ago, you know, the scope of this podcast is really to give a spiritual dimension. What we talk about, Armenian Orthodoxy, really comes into play here. Because here's a group of people that should not have survived that genocide and did. And you could attribute it to many, many different things, but I'd like to attribute it to something a little bit bigger than what our senses pick up. In other words, the extrasensory, what is transcendental, in other words, the divine. And when we talk about Armenian Orthodoxy, I've said many times, what is that basic core set of beliefs that has allowed a people, despite even genocide, to be able to survive? And I firmly believe that if we could tap into this and we understand what that transcendental power is, we have basically the key to our life. We have the key to our successes, to our salvation as human beings. You know, over the past few days, I've been speaking at so many different events about the Armenian Genocide, and we have a few more commemorations coming up. At each of these events, we bring out a very basic story about not dwelling in the past, but living that past in our lives today. Now, this is a very difficult thing to understand, because so many times people get caught up in this whole issue of remembrance. You know, remembering is fine. It's good. You need it. It's part of the socialization process. But for me, it's very important that that remembrance means something in our lives today. And what good is it that we remember the past and we fail to do something about what's going on today? Just this past week, we were ordered to give special recognition to the 100th anniversary of the massacres in Adana. And certainly that is beautiful. It's a beautiful gesture to remember what happened 100 years ago. But one of the points I made in my sermon this last Sunday was, okay, have you ever stopped to think why in 1909 the massacres in Adana took place without American intervention? Well, because in America, they were celebrating the 100th anniversary of Abraham Lincoln. Why did Adana take place in 1909? And the British didn't intervene, because in Britain, they were celebrating the 100th anniversary of Charles Darwin. And so the question is, how come today in Darfur, Armenians are not intervening? Because we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the massacres in Adana. Do you see the absurdity of just remembering the past without making an application for today? That's what we need to do. We need to take that past and really push ourselves. Push ourselves in the direction so that it has a meaning today. So that when you say that I am a child of genocide survivors, or I am a Christian in general, that that has a meaning. That you are living that Christian experience in everything that you're doing. Now you say, well, what can we do? And that is the big question that we have today. We look at Darfur, and right now a genocide is taking place. And I've been a big advocate for us to intervene, for us to make noise. You know that just a couple years ago through our Inner Shoes Ministries, we were able to come up with signatures, and California, Governor Schwarzenegger signed into legislation two acts, one which would divest California and one which would divest the UC system from the Sudan. Very important, because if they don't have guns, they can't commit genocide. Wouldn't it have been great in 1915 if somebody had divested from Turkey and Turkey didn't have the weapons to perpetrate the genocide against the Armenians? That's how simple it is. I mean, think about this in your personal lives. You go through difficulties. If you keep running into the same difficulties over and over and over and over again, it means you're not learning from the past. The little child doesn't touch the stove. Why? Because the first time he put his hands up to the stove, he burnt himself. Imagine if he didn't have that memory. And he kept putting his hand back up on that stove and keep burning himself. Well, the first time you burn yourself, you move your hand back. The next time you get a little close to it, you realize that that's not a good thing. And in the same way, when we look at our history, whether it is individual history, the relationships that you've gone through, or collective history, in the case of Armenian genocide or the Holocaust, or our big collective picture, which is this global environment that we're living in, and in it we have issues of genocide. We need to be able to touch one another to be able to learn and prevent and stop. Not only prevent, but stop genocide. That's what we need today in Darfur. And one of the ways we do that is by looking at what's going on in the past, definitely, but also not being afraid to rise to the occasion. Now, you know that we're doing this famine. I've spoken about it. What we do is we collectively get together and we fast for 30 hours to raise some money for the children of Darfur, for these children who are living in refugee camps, have been exiled from their homes. And somebody asked me the other day, say, well, okay, you know, you're feeding these people, but really that's not the problem. The problem is that there is a genocide. I mean, that's like if you dropped a sack of potatoes at Auschwitz. Well, you know, there's a genocide going on. There's a Holocaust going on. What good is it giving some people some rice when there's a big problem outside? Before I answer that, listen to today's spiritual bubble.
Today's spiritual bubble asks, does it matter? Once upon a time, there was a wise man who used to go to the ocean to do his writing. He had a habit of walking on the beach before he began his work. One day, he was walking along the shore. As he looked down the beach, he saw a human figure moving like a dancer. He smiled to himself to think of someone who would dance to the day, so he began to walk faster to catch up. As he got closer, he saw that it was a young man, and the young man wasn't dancing, but instead was reaching down to the shore, picking up something, and very gently throwing it into the ocean. As he got closer, he called out, "Good morning, what are you doing?" The young man paused, looked up, and replied, "I'm throwing starfish in the ocean." "I guess I should have asked, why are you throwing starfish in the ocean?" "The sun is up and the tide is going out. If I don't throw them in, they'll die." "But young man, don't you realize that there are miles and miles of beach and starfish all along it? You can't possibly make a difference. The young man lit politely, then bent down, picked another starfish, and threw it into the sea, past the breaking waves, and said, "It made a difference for that one." This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Sometimes we need those little stories to really drive home an important point. And the point is that it does matter to those certain starfish. It does matter to the people who are hurting. You and I are called not to be judge, not to judge who is worthy to live and who is worthy to die. What you and I are called to is to give. And what are we giving? A sack of rice? Some potatoes? Absolutely not. Those are just outwards manifestations of what we're really giving. And that's love. You see, love is that one thing that is never consumed. It's always with us. And we always have it. And you can give it away. And as you give it away, it's never consumed by that person, but it becomes an opportunity for that person to give to others. I think about my grandparents going through genocide. I remember that it is by the act of love that they found home and harbor where they went. And it is act of love that we came to find our life. And today we have an obligation to pass along that love to others. So we see that history begins to have some important practical application in our lives today. Because of our past, because of who we are, because of identity, and whether that's an Armenian, a Jew, or whether it's your faith as a Christian and you belong to the family of Christ, you now have an obligation to pass along that love. Now, I told you today that I'd like to approach that genocide issue in a spiritual manner, and this is exactly why. Because you can talk about the historical implications ad nauseum. You could talk about all of the elements that are present today in its denial or in its acceptance of genocide and these acts of inhumanity. But it doesn't change the situation from those who suffer. And so we have dual obligations now to be able to get out there and help those people who are suffering at the same time to bring an end to that suffering. How do you do that? Well, we can pick up guns. We can just go out and blow up people. And certainly that has been done in the past. We have become policemen, so to speak, on many occasions where we've seen something going wrong. What happened in Iraq, we didn't like the way the regime was going. We played super cop. We went over there and we started firing. But as Martin Luther King Jr. so eloquently said, and I'm going to try this, I have to paraphrase it. He says, you can't overcome darkness with darkness. You get rid of darkness with light. You cannot overcome hatred with more hatred. Just because somebody hates you, you can't just keep going over there and hating them back. You can only overcome hatred with love. That's a tall order. It's a difficult order. It's not easy to love somebody who hates you. It's not easy to love somebody who wants your annihilation. And for this reason, you need to be connected spiritually. Listen for a moment to this story that comes to us from the life of Jesus. We find it in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 17, verses 14, and going on, continuing. I won't tell you to which verse because that's what's interesting about this story. Which verse? Where does it end? It says, when Jesus and his disciples came to the crowd, a man came up to Jesus and kneeling before him said, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic, and he suffers terribly, for often he falls into the fire and often into the water. And I brought him to your disciples, and they could not heal him." Jesus answered, "O faithless and perverse generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him here to me." And Jesus rebuked him, and the demon came out of him, and the boy was cured instantly. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, "Why could we not cast it out?" He said to them, "Because of your little faith. For truly I say to you, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move. And nothing will be impossible to you. But this kind never comes out except by prayer and fasting." Now, this is the end of the parable. And the reason why I said that you don't know where it ends is because that last verse is not in all the Bibles. It happens to be in the Armenian text. In the Armenian Orthodox tradition, we have that one little line that says that this particular type comes out, this particular type of demon comes out with prayer and fasting. And I emphasize this, that it is so important that when we're going after the big prizes, when we're looking at situations, whether it's in your life, the overwhelming situation that you're in, or whether it's the global situations that we find ourselves in to bring about peace, it is essential that we understand that it's not a matter of prayer, it's not a matter of just action. But that's why Jesus says this type needs prayer and fasting. Why? Because the fasting prepares our body. It brings our body into unison with our spirit and our soul. You know, one of the most important traditions that we do have is the fast. The fast cleanses our bodies. It allows us to be in harmony with our soul, to be able to touch and speak to the soul. Do you remember a few weeks ago we talked about the power of prayer? And in that one discussion, I shared with you this idea that prayer is not so much talking with God, because our Heavenly Father definitely knows what we have in our mind. Of course we want peace. Of course we want harmony. But prayer is a talk with ourselves, because we don't take that moment to stop and really reflect for ourselves of our needs and how we can accomplish the tasks that we have in front of us. The same thing with fasting. Fasting allows us to starve, to hunger, and really realize, yes, what it feels like to be in the shoes of another, those who are starving. Definitely, there's an application to that, but it also gives us a chance to really understand what is essential in life and how important it is to be coordinated, body, mind, and spirit. I remember when I was a teenager, I had a class, a religion class, which was taught to us by just an incredible man. Actually, he was a survivor of the genocide too, Father Torkom Sardarian. And he spoke to us. It was the first time that I had heard anybody really explain the value of fasting and the need to cleanse the body as a ritual, as something that we go through and really cleanse it from the inside. And, you know, this is important because many times when we think about fasting, especially during the time of Lent, it's usually connected to some kind of a thing of giving up something, give up sweets, give up chocolate, give up different habits that we've acquired throughout the years. And we say that's the fast. It isn't. What it is giving up something, which is okay for disciplining. It definitely has its values and its merits, but it is not the fast to be able to cleanse yourself. And when Jesus challenges us, he's really pushing us to really put everything in unison, that there are certain things in life that require that prayer and fast. And that's why this coming weekend with our group, we're going to get together, we're going to pray, and we are going to fast. To raise money, definitely, raise consciousness, but also to raise our consciousness about hunger in the world, about disease, about genocide. And I'm saying all this because it's really, we are at a time right now when we need to answer the past with our acts today. It doesn't help me any to be able to stand here and say that I am a survivor of Rwanda, I am a survivor of Cambodia, I am a survivor of the Holocaust, I am a survivor of the Armenian Genocide, and have no appropriate way of applying that to what's going on today, especially in Darfur. Right now, today, the acts that are being perpetuated and perpetrated in Darfur are the same acts that took place in 1915 in Nazi Germany, Pol Pot's regime, in Rwanda, in Bosnia. These are the acts of genocide. These are the acts of evil. And I want to push it even one step further. Think about this for a moment, that maybe these aren't acts, but it is the same evil. It is the same evil from beginning to end. And there is only one way to overcome that evil. It's with the power of love. Not with more evil, but with power of love. To be able to reach out even when it hurts us and help those in need. To help those who suffer. Hey, let's head out to London right now. We're going to come back with some final thoughts and really how to put all this together. Right now, here's Haraj from London.
This is Haraj in London, and welcome to this week's Global Perspective. With the election of President Barack Obama, the United States showed the world how far it has come in overcoming a long history of racial discrimination. Yet the opening of the United Nations Conference on Racism in Geneva, which was open on Monday, was marred by racist and hateful remarks by Iran's hardline president Ahmadinejad, who not only denies the Holocaust, but accused Israel as, quote, most cruel and repressive racist regime, unquote, on the exact day that Israel commemorates the victims of the Holocaust nationally. Angry United Nations General Secretary Ban Ki-moon at a press conference in Geneva said, quote, I deplore the use of this platform by the Iranian president to accuse, divide, and even incite, unquote. He went on to say, quote, this is the opposite of what this conference seeks to achieve. This makes it significantly more difficult to build constructive solutions to the very real problems of racism, unquote. It seems that even as humanity has reached the 21st century, we have not been able to progress from primitive perceptions about race, ethnicity, minorities, and other groups. Back in 1998, the UN General Assembly had decided to proclaim the year 2001 as the International Year of Mobilization Against Racism, Racial Discrimination, Xenophobia, and Related Intolerance. The observance was to draw world attention and provide a momentum for further political commitment to the elimination of racism and racial discrimination. This week's conference in Geneva, formerly known as the Durban Review Conference, is to evaluate progress towards the goals set by the 2001 World Conference that took place in Durban, South Africa. It is meant to serve as the catalyst to fulfilling the promises agreed to in 2001 through reinvigorated actions, initiatives, and practical solutions. In fact, one of the key statements of the Durban Declaration and Program of Action back in 2001 was that the Holocaust must never be forgotten. For the Armenians who will be commemorating the genocide of the Armenians in the Ottoman Empire on Friday, on April 24, the struggle against Turkish denial of the genocide continues for 94 years now. But the relevance of the UN Conference on Racism and Racial Discrimination to the Armenian community and generally non-Muslim minorities living in Turkey today cannot be missed. Today, I would like to draw your attention on this rather quote-unquote forgotten community in Turkey. Even as the attention of the media has been on the recognition of the genocide and Turkish-Armenian relations, the continued discrimination and racial slurs against the Armenians living in the Republic of Turkey today is completely overlooked. Against the background of all the recent talk about improving relations and reconciliation, how ironic that it was only last month that a court in Turkey found an opposition member of the Turkish parliament guilty of, quote, staining the personality of the president, unquote, for accusing that President Abdullah Gül's mother is Armenian. Indeed, over the decades, the Turkish state has institutionalized discrimination against the Armenian community in particular and the minorities in general. Whether it is through the illegal seizure and appropriation of community properties in the 1930s, intimidation and social humiliation in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, extreme othering and demonization in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, and physical threats and lethal collective targeting in recent years, the state has increasingly tightened the boundaries of the Armenian community in Turkey. Under these circumstances, the community has become reclusive and relatively silent. It has to be said that there are legitimate grievances and difficulties imposed by the state and zealous officials which need to be addressed and resolved, regardless whether Turkey becomes a member of the European Union or not. Giving permission to repair an old church, for instance, or permission to educate native clergy or teach in minorities' own language should not be related to EU membership nor to the ideological struggle between secularist and Islamist in the country, but to legitimacy of democracy in Turkey. Secondly, the realities of the Armenian community in Turkey should be decoupled from both the Armenian diaspora and the Republic of Armenia. That is, Armenians living in Turkey should not be subject to collective punishment for developments outside their control and volition. Third, government officials, nationalist figures, and a large section of media representatives continue to promote an extreme version of othering, which incites hatred and violence against minority groups in Turkey. Such othering and demonization should be prevented by both law and public discourse. The guarantee of equal treatment and freedom for all citizens in Turkey, regardless of race, ethnicity, or religion, is the first step towards the elimination of racism and discrimination. The most basic question is how could one talk about normalization of Turkey-Armenia bilateral relations without paying attention to the conditions of Armenians in Turkey itself? This, I believe, is the million-dollar question. As Mary Robinson, the then United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, said in 1999, which is true today, 10 years later, quote, "We see all around us racism and racial discrimination continued unabated. Although we refer to our world as a global village, it is a world sadly lacking in the sense of closeness towards neighbor and community, which the word village implies. In each region and within all countries, there are problems stemming from either a lack of respect for or lack of acceptance of the inherent dignity and equality of all human beings. Our world is witness to serious ethnic conflicts, to discrimination against minorities, indigenous peoples, and migrant workers, the accusation of institutionalized racism in police forces, harsh immigration and asylum policies, hate sites on the internet, and youth groups promoting intolerance and xenophobia, unquote. We have much to reflect on this week. While we commemorate and honor the victims of the Armenian Genocide, let us also not lose sight of the fact that there are still millions of people in our world today, 94 years after the genocide, who suffer racial discrimination and hatred and are under the constant threat of lethal forces. I leave you with these rather somber notes. And until next week, this is Hraç Çilingirian with the Global Perspective.
Definitely something new for all of us. I think the situation in Turkey, and I always thank Hraç for these beautiful insights into what's going on in the world. And it connects directly with what we were saying earlier, Martin Luther King saying that you can't overcome darkness with more darkness. You cannot overcome evil with more evil. The only way is to really become personifications of love in your actions. And I know this is very difficult. We said it a few minutes ago. But that's why we fast. That's why we pray. To be able to strengthen ourselves to really do God's work. And I believe that's what we're up against this week. You want to do something big, just like what happened in the story about Jesus. We read earlier from Matthew chapter 17, it's the same thing. You need to be able to put your body, mind, and soul into it. All three have to be united and working towards it, especially when you're talking about something as big as genocide. Well, we start our fast this Saturday morning on the 26th. And, you know, if you're in the LA area, you're always welcome, but you're welcome to follow us along on the web. You know, we Twitter. There's a In His Shoes account on Twitter. You could follow us there. And, of course, our website, inhisshoes.org. We'll have all kinds of stuff going on during the famine. But we kick it off with a very special service Friday night. But Saturday morning, all the participants get together. And we will be fasting for exactly 30 hours. We have a group of us that are going to be participating in Armenia. Yes, I don't know what the actual count is, but it's upward of 30 or 40 young people in Armenia who are going to be fasting at the same time as we are over here. So we're connected on both sides of the globe. And each person over here has collected some money, some sponsorship for the number of hours that they're going to fast. And at the end of it, 30 hours, we break the fast. Is there anything better than breaking the fast over probably the best breakfast? Well, what would that be? Of course, Sunday morning, we're going to be at the Divine Liturgy and celebrating the body and blood of Jesus Christ. In other words, we break the fast with the consumption of love. Yes, Jesus Christ in our systems. And with that, we find the energy, yes, together to overcome some of the biggest hurdles that we have in our lives. The money, which right now we have a promise for one-time matching fund. We're looking for, I'm hoping by this Saturday, we'll be able to enter the famine with about 3 or 4 times matching fund. And these funds will be delivered via World Vision, which is one of the big NGOs that is operating, still operating in Darfur, believe it or not. Most of them were thrown out. They're still operating in Darfur and operating in Chad. So through World Vision, we're going to be sending this money out right out there to these kids that need it. This is one way of throwing one starfish back into the ocean. It doesn't solve the entire problem, but it's a means of us practicing our love. And I challenge you this weekend, whatever you're doing, to at least stop for a moment, to think about the difficulties. Check out the websites. Go to the different websites, especially Stop Genocide Now. Check out all the stories on there. Some remarkable. Our friend Gabriel just got back from Chad, and he's recorded, documented many of the stories that he found in those refugee camps. Read them, and then as you're reading them, say that these are my brothers and my sisters. These are the ones that I need to help out. And just as God has helped you out in your life, you find the strength to help out others. Well, I know this has been a difficult podcast. Nobody wants to talk about these issues, but certainly they are the cornerstone of this ministry. In fact, we got started in His shoes by being people who once had shoes to be filled, and nobody really wanted to walk in the shoes of the Armenian people. Well, now it's changed, and we have an opportunity to love others. Let's take that opportunity. I want to invite you to check out all of the exciting stuff that's taking place. We're at inhisshoes.org. Go to apostle.net, where there's just been a revamp recently, and you can see our new website, which has all kinds of stuff on there, including the two main podcasts that we have, Sermons from Glendale, and of course, The Next Step with Father Voskin. And we've been talking at different campuses during the last week and the next few days. Most of this stuff will be up on the web in just a couple days, so you could download it and be a part of the action, be a part of all the good things that are taking place with God's love in the center. Finally, I just wanted to bring your attention to a very special website. It's called Fast Darfur, F-A-S-T Darfur, D-A-R-F-U-R, .org. And there is a fast that is going to be taking place. Mia Farrow at the helm, and a lot of people, a lot of us are going to be fasting in solidarity with the people of Darfur. And I invite you to take a look, and if you can, really join in that one too. That begins next Monday. Some of us are just going to continue right through the weekend, and we need your prayers, as do all people. And let me take this opportunity to really thank you for all of the support and the prayers that you have been sending our way. You know, we hit a record number of listeners this past week, and we're only looking at hitting new records in the coming weeks. But we do need your financial support as well. Go to inhisshoes.org, press on the donate button. Better yet, if you know some people that can really make a difference and are looking for a ministry that's making a difference in this world, please tell them about us. Tell them to become a sponsor, and their dollars will really go to some good use. Well, if you heard the music in the background, that was Gomidas Vartabet. Actually, it was Armen Babakhanyan playing a double CD set called Gomidas Works, Volume 1 and 2. And Armen Babakhanyan was playing Gomidas Vartabet, who was one of the casualties, one of the deaths of the Armenian Genocide, a big figure in the Armenian Church, and certainly appropriate to hear his music today. Of course, we were surrounded by those tunes by Jethro Tull on both sides, and in the middle somewhere we had Parik Nazarian. So for all the good people who put this podcast together, for the people at In His Shoes, for Susie, our producer, for Ken up in the booth, for Harachad in London, and Ani with her bubbles, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we'll take the next steps.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.